overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Have a beautiful week.
So it's so good to be here on this threshold of a new year, or the ending of an old year, however you choose to think about it. And it's so good to be home. You know, on my Zen calendar the other day, it said, you know, when you go on a journey, ultimately the journey takes you home. It doesn't take you to a foreign land. And recently, Trey and I went up to Boston to do a big family reunion. And what you don't know about Boston is Boston was the place that Trey and I went to in our 20s when we were searching, when we were lost, you might say, in the early 20s. Anybody know what the turbulent 20s are like? You go through relationship after relationship, career after career. You don't know where you are. And when I arrived up there on Saturday a week ago, I went there to come home to the 25, 6-year-old who lived there. I hadn't been back there really since he was 25. So here I am at 71, meeting my 25-year-old and having this direct experience with him. And it's so funny, you sing that song, Amazing, to have the dream that you don't really know what it is when you're in your 20s, to be searching for something seemingly outside yourself, but really knowing all along that you were searching for this thing inside. And so as Trey and I were walking down those old familiar streets that we walked down 40 some years ago, we just had our 44th anniversary. Marriages I do stay together, generally speaking. Anyway, a little couple in the back that I married here, right here. And I told that 25-year-old, you know, you will do amazing things. You don't know it right now because you're lost. You're in Boston. You just left graduate school. Trey was lost. I was lost. We didn't know where we were going to live. After Boston, we went to Maine. After Maine, we went to Atlanta. And then we ended up here in Huntsville to discover that thing was seeking us all along. When you stop seeking your good outside yourself, you find it. And so I listened to Glory G's beautiful talk last week, and there was one little pearl that I got from it that I, and hopefully you just get one pearl. That's all you need to get from any of these talks. And the pearl I got was when she said, you can be in two mindsets at the same time. I was David Leonard, the 71-year-old, awake, aware, having just taught this beautiful class on effortless mindfulness. So I had this emptiness that was operating, and yet I was also that 25-year-old who was coming to be met again and to be told, you know, you will get through this. Your life will find its direction later on. You don't have to define yourself by the world's standards. And that life will bless you in ways you can't even imagine. So I'm speaking on always beginning. And I pulled out my old Mark Nepo threadbare book called The One Life We're Given. And we've all been given this life, this temporary life, you know, this human life. And yet we're these eternal souls. I thought it was interesting that while I was up there for Christmas, that Ram Dass made his transition. And everybody and his brother was on Facebook saying, oh, how sad I am, how sad I am. And I thought, why are you sad? I remember when Rumi made his transition, he says, don't grieve for me, I'm with my beloved. And I know Ram Dass would have said the same thing. Don't grieve for me, I'm with my beloved, Neem Karoli Baba. That was his guru. And I was a student of Ram Dass's from the very beginning. He was probably my very first teacher. And Ram Dass used to say, you know, you come here as a nobody, like this beautiful little baby. And then you go into somebody training. That's where all the trouble begins. You go into somebody training and you become a somebody. And if you're Ram Dass, you become Richard Albert. You become a professor at Harvard University, only to realize that you have to go back into nobody training. Remember Emily Dickinson? In her enlightened phase, she said, I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. How boring to be a somebody. How public like a frog to spend your livelong day on an admiring bog. Now, as I was a ninth grade student reading Emily Dickinson, I thought, oh my God, my somebody wants to be a nobody again. But yet you go into somebody training and you get your degrees and you chase after your good and you think it's all out there in the world until, if you're blessed, your lover walks out on you, as mine did. And then you realize that the love was not in that person, but it was within me all along. Or if you're in New York City and you've got a corporate job and you think it's defining you, even though you hate your job. You know, I was just with my nieces and nephews, and they all have extremely lucrative positions, New York, San Francisco, and they're not happy. And they said, why are you so happy, David? I said, because I'm vocationally aroused. I love what I do. I'm tele-erotic. I'm in love with the purpose, which is just to awaken the heart of humanity, where they're struggling in hedge funds and all this stuff so that they can live in the world of more. More money, more houses, better cars, more stuff. And yet my beautiful niece and her husband, he said, but I want the quality of life that you can have in Maine. Maybe I have to let go of all that stuff that I thought defined me in order to discover something that is so simple and so profound. And so Trey and I, we stayed in the beautiful Lenox Hotel, which is a big old fireplace as you walk in. And there was a million people, tourists everywhere. One thing I love about Boston is like a United Nations. You walk down the streets, nobody's speaking English. I love it. Every color, every nationality. Trey insisted we get my hair cut because he thought I was a shaggy dog. So we pull into this barber, which was $50 for a haircut, $20, $70. This is what you get. And the young man that's cutting my hair, he just wanted to talk the whole time. He's buzzing up the side, and he's from Uruguay. He's from Uruguay, and he said, I'm an only kid, and my parents died when I was 16, and in Uruguay, they stick you in like an orphanage place, he said, which is dreadful. So he said, at 16, I knew that I had to get the hell out of Uruguay. So he got on his little moped, and he went 16 hours down to Brazil from Uruguay, where his friend and his dad lived. And the dad let him stay there, finished high school. He even got like an engineering thing, he said. And the old man was dying of some cancer thing, and he didn't have the medication, so he got in his scooter, went 16 hours up to Uruguay, got the medication, came down, and brought it to this man. He met a beautiful young lady. Marriage didn't work. Got married, was married for 9 years. Through her, he got to the States. His engineering degree wouldn't work, so he became a hairdresser. The marriage ended. And he says, and there he is, 30 years old, cutting my hair, telling me his story. And I said, you know, he said, everybody wants to hook me up with another girl. And he said, but I want to find myself. I said, that's what you need to find. You don't need another external something in order to define you. You need to find this thing within yourself. And at the end of the haircut, he was in my arms, and I told him, you'd be the son, even though I've told you all that too. I said, I'll be your daddy. You know, I didn't mean that literally, you know. You meet these people, and their lives are always at that threshold of discovering a new way to live this life. At age 30, it's just beginning. So I wanted to talk about something which is always beginning, which is the life that we've been given. And Mark Neap, at the very, very beginning of the book, he describes his dad, who was his great teacher. He was estranged from his parents for 20 years, but then when the dad gets sick and is ready to die, he said one phone call from the mother, it's as if those 20 years just dissolved. And he's by the bedside of his dad before he makes his transition. And then the heart opened, and they had this direct experience. But he talks about his dad who loved to sail. And he said, my father has been with me, bless you, since his death, speaking to me through the things that he did, the things that he built, and the things that he loved. What I've discovered about death is that there is no death, that everybody who's been here before is still here. And if you can be permeable, you can tap into their wisdom as he does with his father. It's so funny because when I had the heart attack, I was thinking of Ram Dass. They're wheeling me down on this gurney. They're tearing my clothes off. I had my butterfly socks on. They kept saying, what's with the socks? What's with the socks? I said, I'm going on vacation. Not, but those are my vacation. And then they threw this towel at my junk, and I thought, oh, there's modesty, even though I'm dying. And as they're wheeling me down, I remember Ram Dass when he had the stroke. He said, I'm being wheeled down and I'm looking at the lights. And I'm thinking, yeah, it's the same experience. And Ram Dass's thought was, I'm the same screwed up person I always was. A little bit more awareness. Yeah, and I felt the same way. Wow, here I am journeying down, this is it, and yet it wasn't it. And so when Ram Dass came back from his stroke, his beautiful, grateful heart said, my guru stroked me. This wasn't a curse, this was a blessing. And when I flew to Austin, Texas to see him after the stroke, they wheeled him out on that stage, and there was maybe 1,000 people in the audience, and he sat there in the silence for the longest time. And then he said, thank you for surfing the silence with me. And he said, could we meet in this new mind, not my local somebody mind, but in this emptiness that has awakened, where everything becomes grace? And you could sense that there was a transmission. Once the mind stopped expecting him to be the old, clever Ram Dass, he became this open-hearted, beautiful holding space where there was this direct transmission. So Mark Nepo's doing the same thing with his dad on the very first page of the book. He says, in the relationship between our soul and our will, our soul is like a sail. And once hoisted in the open, our soul is filled with the wind of spirit, and the wind establishes our course and direction. Our will, on the other hand, is the rudder, and its job is to follow where the soul, filled with spirit, is leading us. So our soul shows us where to go, while our will helps us steer ourselves along the way. Now, Ram Dass said the same thing. If you ever Google him up on YouTube, he said there's the shift between living from soul and living from ego or will. And we all think that we are going to ride the horse of life, we're going to direct it and take this life where we think it should go. He says, but when you realize that you've really never been in control, and that this life force, this spirit that blows through the sail of your soul, is always moving you where you need to go, even though at the times it may feel uncomfortable. It's so funny, Trey's been asking me to clean out the basement, and the basement's got a lot of my old paraphernalia from the 45 years we've lived together, and I was trying to clean out one of my sections, which he always says are the messiest, and there are the old photo albums of my youth. And I pulled out the photo album of 1971 when I graduated from college, and I went to Europe by myself, because the first lover dumped me to go be with a guy named Trey, and I went to Europe by myself. And so in that album, all it is are postcards of David in England, of Brussels, of Amsterdam. There's not one human element. Even way back then, I was still looking for the place, and at the very end of this whole album, there's a little picture of a 21-year-old young kid. And I thought, oh, do I really even know you? But life, the soul, was moving him in this direction and had been moving him and still is moving him, with the ego trying to control things. Until, of course, I learned from Llewellyn Von Lee, he thinks he has control. And in that instant, I realized I've never had control. I've always just been buffeted around. You cannot stop the sails of life, the wind of life from blowing, but you can learn to set your sails and navigate your course. So he said, when the sail of my soul is full and I'm being carried forward, a vision greater than myself, feeling most alive along the way, begins to emerge. When we can trust the soul that perhaps brought you here this Sunday morning, where you have a felt awareness of a connectedness to that something that is bigger than you, because it's really never been about you. It's been about this presence that little baby is embodying. And of course, somewhere along the way, an ego will get in and she'll learn the word no and mine. I just was with my 5-year-old niece, my 2-year-old niece, and my 3-month-old nephew. My 3-month-old nephew is in the same exact place she is. The 2-year-old is, no, no, I don't want it. Throwing the toys. The 5-year-old is a little bit more. She's pulling on the dogs, telling the dogs that she's in control. And I see the evolution of the baby into the 5-year-old and into the 2-year-old, and it's so perfect. So Mark Nepo goes on to say this about the soul. He says, when we are devoted to experience, a direct experience of life, a direct experience of truth, a direct experience of God, he says, then we discover our way. But we have to be devoted to the experience of it, not the concept of it, not who will I be when I arrive at X, Y, or Z, but what is this experience of life showing me? And then he says, we usually think about where we're going instead of listening for where life is taking us. Now, I realized I really didn't know, because the one thing I said, I never wanted to go to Alabama, and I've been here for 30 years. And the one person I never wanted to be with was the man that broke up my long-term relationship, and I've been with him for 44. So obviously, I don't have a clue. And the one career I said I would never do was ministry. I considered it the opiate of the people. I just had a disdain for religion, and now I'm just in love with the God that's everywhere. Now, another Ram Dass thing. Ram Dass said, what if we knew that all of this is God in drag? He spoke my language. It's all God in drag. This is all God. That's all there is. And, you know, we're doing this series this month on light, that we're centers of light, that we're light beings. We did that candlelight service, and we said, I am the light of the world. You are the light of the world. We are the light of the world. What if we meet as light beings in that light, where there's no egoic my light versus your light? You know, it's all perfect. So my soul, our soul, took us to Boston so I could meet that young man again and tell them that he would do amazing things. And as we're walking down the streets of Boston, and it's freezing cold, and I'm walking down Commonwealth Avenue, which is this kind of boulevard where the old brownstones on one side, the old brownstones on the other, the big statues of the horses and Paul Revere, one by land and two by sea, and I and the other. It's all there, and the homeless people. They were everywhere. And Trey and I just watched FX's version of Scrooge, which is phenomenal, because it shows you how really dark Ebenezer was. And Ebenezer had to go through that essential shift out of the greedy, mine more, counting of money to where his heart could open. He had to evolve to that place, and it so beautifully shows it. So after watching Ebenezer's heart open, how could I then walk past all the homeless people with their little paper cup? So I put lots of money in my pockets. And as we were going to the North End, which is one of our favorite places to eat, it's where, like, Little Italy of Boston. Trey and I used to go there, and they'd had the chickens hanging out. I mean, it was really. And you went to pick fruit, and he'd slap your hand, and he'd pick the old fruit. You couldn't. And they all spoke Italian, and the cannolis were great. So we found this little Italian restaurant that we were going to treat ourselves to pasta, even though we're not supposed to eat carbs. But you know, it's homemade pasta, and you can't say no to the pasta in the North End. But prior to that, because it was Sunday and the restaurants don't open till noon, I thought, let's go to St. Leonard's Cathedral. It's named after me. Not really. It is. St. Leonard was the one that did the Stations of the Cross. It's big cathedral, North End. It was high mass, and I went to open the doors, and they're all genuflecting at their pews, and the organ's playing, and something in me said, been there, done that. And I closed the doors to Leonard's Cathedral, and as I walked out, there's an old lady with a paper cup. And I gave her a dollar, and she kissed my hand, and then Trey gave her a dollar, and she kissed his hand. That was my communion that Sunday morning. To have these experiences with these different people. Yeah, and so he says, we can't know what direction awaits us if we hover too close to the shore of our past, the shore of our family, or the shore of someone else's dreams for us, or the shore of an old identity. And if we are to feel the wind in our face, we must leave the shallows and the harbors and then make our way into the open, where we can drift in the deep. And only then will that larger, timeless destination show itself to us. Only then will our soul be filled with enough spirit that our smaller, controlling self will have no choice but to engage in steering us toward all that really matters in life. So when I'm standing with my brother or my niece's husband, who I married there in Maine, and he says, you know, David, I just want a quality of life that isn't so dog-eat-dog. And I said, you know, when you're ready, you will change. And I know you can find a wonderful job up there in Maine or Connecticut if you leave the big city and the corporate job, that life will take you where you need to go. But we have to be willing to let go of the harbor and trust that life is moving us forward in these beautiful adventures that wait for us. So how many of you have been my students in class? There's a realization that that we don't live in a chronological time. In fact, the Greeks, they called it chronos time, chronological time, which is a past and a future. There's a thing called eternal now reality that is always what we are. It's called kairotic time, that we're always living in the moment. So when you're in kairotic time, which then everything from the past can come in, like it did for me in Boston, and you can see it in now time. Oh my God, my awake, aware person is meeting that confused young man and telling him that he's okay, and he still has those feelings. when I went into the Lenox Hotel, and I'm still grieving. We didn't know whether Bert would live or die, and Al brought him back to life with everybody else's love. And I walked in the hotel, and everybody's happy and drinking, and I sit by the fireplace, and I'm thinking of baby Speck, who used to sit there by the fire with me, and Bert would lie by one side, and Humphrey'd be in my lap. And it was not, the warmth wasn't coming out, so I opened the doors to the fireplace, and all the warmth came out. So people sitting in the chair say, why are you sitting down there? I said, because that's where my dogs would sit, and I want to be with my dogs. And so I'm listening to Christmas carols, and I'm having, you know, oh, there's no place like home, and I'm having a little, you know, clamped thing with the dogs, and I'm realizing they're here with me, even though they're not in form. So what if you get to that strange, chaotic time where everything operates simultaneously, and we're no longer caught up in the delusion of yesterday and tomorrow? So I went to my trusty old Ralph Waldo Emerson, which I've taught many times, and one of Glory G's favorite essays, his essay on self-reliance. And my favorite aspect of the essay on self-reliance is when Emerson is sitting in his window, and I went to his house. I did my doctoral thesis on the Tao of Emerson. So Trey and I go to Concord, Massachusetts, hoping I can see his library, and the library is all cordoned off with ropes. You can't. But you can look at a list of the books that Emerson read. And I had this deep affinity with him. And especially sitting at his desk, looking out of his windows, he fancied himself as a gardener, but he couldn't grow virtually anything. But here's what he says in this lovely essay. He said, these roses under my window make no reference to former roses or to better ones. They are for what they are. They exist with God today. There is no time to them. There is simply the rose. It is perfect in every moment of its existence. Before the leaf bud has burst, its whole life acts. In the full-blown flower, there is no more. In the leafless root, there is no less. Its nature is satisfied, and it satisfies nature in all moments alike. It doesn't cling to its former days or yearn for better days. It's content right where it is. There is no time to it. But man, humanity, they postpone, they remember. He does not live in present moment, but with reverted eye laments the past, or with heedlessness of the riches that surround him, he stands on tiptoe to foresee a future of abundance someday. He cannot be happy and strong until he too lives with nature in this present moment, above time and always beginning. He says, only the coming is sacred. So what if we are into this beautiful moment right now where our life is flowering and we only get to know what the next step is going to be? And the past and future are kind of illusory things. And yet when we open to the eternal now moment, they both can come in with a fullness that is always fresh and alive, always beginning, he says. So I come home from this trip and it's 60-some degrees here in Huntsville. And it was freezing cold up in Maine. And I walk out into my garden and all my camellias are starting to explode. I have pink camellias and red camellias and yellow camellias. The hyacinths are starting to burst forth in the ground. I know, close your mouth. It's like a virtual waiting for me. And then I go to my old garden journals, which Trey encouraged me to keep. And every year I saw how every January 1st, I'm ordering seeds. I'm planting seeds in the basement. All of these exotic plants that I bought over the years. And as I went through this list from Rare Fine Nurseries, I went, huh, only one is alive out of all 20. Oh, well, you know, the one that survives is the one that you nurture. And so what if life is always showing you that we're always beginning in this timeless, eternal reality, and at whatever age you are, there's the opportunity to embrace those exiled parts of ourselves. In the class that we just finished by Locke Kelly, he talked about the ego operating in three realms. And I told my nieces and nephews this because it's helpful when you're still in somebody training. In the somebody training, you have what they call the manager self. And the manager self wants to be, it's using the rudder of the boat. It's taking you where you think you need to be. It's really got the plan. And it's got everything squared away, not only for you, but for every well-meaning person around you. And you are steering that little boat. That's your manager self. The other self, he says, you have in the egoic realm is the firefighter self. When there is chaos, it's how do you deal with those chaos moments? Now, when we did finally get up to Maine, It was so funny because Trey insisted on his morning coffee, so we go to rent the car. It's downtown Boston. The traffic is hideous, and he insisted on that Starbucks. So here the man in the parking lot at the budget rental, who didn't speak hardly any English, was trying to give Trey instructions, going through the parking lot, over to this, around the corner, and we couldn't understand him, so he walked us all the way to the Starbucks. And then being the New Yorker that I am, I wanted to give him a tip, and he pushed that money away from me. He says, "Don't discount my mitzvah, my good deed, by giving me money." And we had this beautiful moment where this man who doesn't even speak English takes us to the Starbucks. He did understand that. He was going to take us to Dunkin' Donuts, and Trey wouldn't accept Dunkin' Donuts as on par with Starbucks. So, but when we did get to Maine and all the family had arrived from all, you know, Christine was asking me about it. How was your trip? And I said, it was family. I don't need to say anything else. It was chaos beyond chaos that I had ever experienced. Three little children, three dogs, all barking for their alpha role in the thing. 10 adults, and walking in a house, this great big house, was wall-to-wall toys and a train set and dog beds. And you literally, it was hazardous to walk. Hank, you would have fallen over. I nearly did three times going to the bathroom because I had to climb over the toys in order to get into the bathroom. And then Trey, in his wisdom, had rented a little VRBO that was a block away, $120 a night. You walk in, pristinely empty, live flowers on the table, live plants, a little wood-burning stove, just toasty warm, a little creek in the back. The peace and the silence was deafening. There was homemade blueberry muffins in the kitchen that they had made for us. There was orange juice in the refrigerator. Why would you ever want to leave the little VRBO and step back into chaos? But, you know, you embrace what you have. So Emerson talks about this illusion of time. And so much of what he writes about is how we have a reverence for the past. And he was asked at Harvard Divinity School to give their address to the recent graduates. And he said to them, because they had such a reverence for the old-time religion, he said in that Harvard Divinity School address, and got in a lot of trouble, and that's why I always liked him, he said, "Let go of your God of the intellect, and let go of your God of tradition, and let your soul be set on fire with the same fire that ignited it in all of those that you refer to in the past." So he was telling them to have this direct experience of the aliveness of your soul, which is that essential shift that Seamus talked about in our revealing service. And so there's a balance. We have the manager self, we have the firefighter self, and oh, I didn't mention the third aspect of the ego, are the exiled selves. And that's what I discovered was really alive and well within me. I had a lifetime of exiled selves, closeted parts of myself, fearful parts of myself, confused parts of myself. That young man who was searching all through his 20s, he's still in there. The little boy who was shamed growing up, he's still in there. And at this age, when they show up in those beautiful sacred moments, like going through the streets of Boston, where Trey and I walked past the old house we used to live at 89A Myrtle. And I remember we had this little cottagey house with a little gate. And you walked in and we had a sunken living room. We had a fireplace there. I think it was $300 a month, probably now $3,000 a month. And a great big old tree in the front yard. Well, the tree's no longer there. I kind of grieved the tree. But everything is exactly as it was. And at 8:30 in the morning, Trey wanted to knock on the door and ask if we could see it. And I said, no, honey, this is Boston. You don't knock on the door and ask yourselves in. I said, we can have our catharsis standing right out here. The tree's gone, the apartment's here, and we're still alive. And so, yeah, there's something really beautiful. And then we went to Faneuil Hall, and I thought of my beloved Kim, who used to work near there. And it's just like, it's coming home. You're coming home to yourself. Not coming home to Boston, but you're coming home to yourself. And so that's the invitation in this beautiful place where there is no time, where we can operate in awake awareness. And as Locke Kelly says, we're not only here to wake up, but we're here to grow up. They go hand in hand. So the growing up part is like Gloria G reminds her people, the words in your mouth, a blessing or a curse, according to how you use it. So I remember my niece was saying about little William, "Are you being a bad boy now?" Because he was crying. I said, "Be very mindful what you call him. He's not a bad boy when he's crying, and a good boy when he doesn't cry. He's a good boy all the time. And sometimes he cries because he wants your attention. So be very conscious as to what we say, you know, to each other and to ourselves, because everything we really say to another is really coming right back and mirroring our own self. So it's all you, and it's all beautiful. So yeah, this is by Zen Calendar. Yesterday, Maya Angelou said, "Be present in all things and thankful for all things." It's a great way to end the year, isn't it? Be present in all things, wherever you are is exactly where you need to be, and strangely, be thankful in all things. In all things, seeing all the homeless, they opened my heart. Having the heart attack, it opened my heart even further. Being in New York City and having my gallbladder nearly explode, it turned me around and I said, the quality of my life isn't worth it. I can leave this and get in that sail and let my soul take me to San Francisco. Go to graduate school and dance. Didn't work out. And the soul keeps taking you. And in all things, give thanks. Because, as he quotes Charlie Chaplin, this is today, in the end, you realize that everything is a big gag. It's a big joke. None of this is real. It's a dream that we've created. And when you can see it in that way, then tomorrow was Gertrude Stein. She says, and then when you get there, there is no there there. When you get there, there's no there there. So where do you get to? You get to that holy instant where endings and beginnings, the spiral dance goes on, and we're always beginning. We're always stepping into a new life. After the heart attack, I'd wake up every morning and thinking, I've got another day here. How beautiful, I've got another day here. When Bert came back, I said, oh, Bert, we get you for a little while longer. Not quite the agile Bert that he used to jump into the car and with ease. Now he gets the front paws in, but the back legs don't make it quite so. So I have to catch the back legs, and then we work with Bert in his new compromised position. But he's still there, as sweet as he could be. And however long I have him, it'll be, so Bert, you and I have got a second chance at this, you know? We're not done yet. There's more to life. It's calling us to experience the new. So the last thing I did was I pulled out my old John O'Donohue, and he has a blessing for new beginnings in here. It's one of my favorite things. And this is what I'm going to close with, a little meditation about the new beginning that's calling all of us into a fuller expression. It does require that we let go of the false sense of self in order to discover the soul, which is an eternal part. This is for Ram Dass too, you know. He said, you know, you come to realize when you're a soul, you stop letting the ego demand more and compartmentalizing yourself, saying that this is what will make you whole, because the truth is that you're already whole. But as Plato says, we need each other to be complete. You know, so the seeds that I plant, the seeds that are going to come to me in the mail, they need that little pot of soil. They need that water. They need that sunlight to be complete. And then when they grow, there'll be these beautiful flowers. Trey was watching a National Geographic thing once, me, and it was in Brazil. And they showed this rare orchid growing in the Brazilian forests. And this orchid blooms at night. It's a white orchid. And it needs this rare moth for it to be pollinated. A moth that has this very long proboscis. It's like a sucking device that can go into the orchid. The moth needs the orchid to survive, and the orchid needs the moth to pollinate itself. And as we're watching this rare symbiotic relationship, Trey says, now I can believe there's a God. There has to be an intelligence greater than we are that would create something so beautiful, which is interconnected, that needs each other. So what if we could suspend our belief system of who we thought we were, the plan that we had, and we could step into that boat of our life, which wants to step out onto the sea of life. And we get to set the sail, but then spirit gets to move it. And we get to chart that course, however skillfully or not that we do, knowing that the wind is going to take us where we need to go. So here's the blessing from beloved John O'Donohue, which is one of my favorites. I'm going to invite you to close your eyes and listen to this. This is for a new beginning. He says, in out-of-the-way places of the heart, where your thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until you were ready to emerge. In out-of-the-way places of the heart, where your thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until you were ready to emerge. For a long time, it has watched your desires, feeling the emptiness growing inside you, noticing how you willed yourself on, still unable to leave what you had outgrown. For a long time, it has watched your desires, feeling the emptiness growing inside you, noticing how you willed yourself on, still unable to leave what you had outgrown. It watched you play with the seduction of safety and the gray promises that sameness whispered. It heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent, wondered, would you always live like this? It watched you play with the seduction of safety and the gray promises that sameness whispered. It heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent and wondered, would you always live like this? Then, the delight, when your courage kindled and out you stepped onto new ground, your eyes young again with energy and dream, a path of plentitude opening before you. Then, the delight, when your courage kindled and out you stepped onto new ground, your eyes young again with energy and dream, a path of plentitude opening before you. And though your destination is not yet clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. Unfurl yourself into the grace of beginning that is at one with your own life's desire. And though your destination is not yet clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. Unfurl yourself into the grace of beginning that is at one with your life's desire. So awaken your spirit to adventure and hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in risk, and soon you will be home in a new rhythm, for your soul senses the world that awaits you. And so, my beloved, awaken your spirit to adventure. Hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in risk, and soon you will be home in a new rhythm, for your soul senses the world that awaits you. And so we smile as we open our hearts to that calling from within, the still small voice that doesn't get louder but gets clearer when we become still. And then we trust in this voice, this inner guidance system, to show us the way. And we look at the trees and we say, trees, teach us and show us the way. And we look at the birds that are singing because it's spring in Huntsville. And we say, teach us and show us the way. And we look at that beautiful emptiness in that baby as she gurgles and smiles at us. And we say, teach us and show us the way. We look into the eyes of our pets who are empty of thought and yet filled with love. And we say to those four-leggeds, if they're four, teach us and show us the way. We put our hand on our own heart, and we realize that this jubilant, beholden heart is the true guidance system that we've been seeking, that wants a quality of life. It's no longer chasing after titles and money and things, but it wants the love that we are to flower. And so we say to our beloved hearts, teach us and show us the way. And then we trust this opening that comes, a felt opening, a felt awareness, that has us close the door to the cathedral and hand the dollar to the homeless woman who kisses the hand. And you feel that you are connected to the one that knows no other. It's all you. And you open the doors of the fireplace and the hearth of the heart, and you feel the warmth that's still there, and even the ones that are no longer here in form are still there in your heart. And so you can't hold them in your arms, but you're holding them in your heart. Ah. And you feel the depth of belonging, knowing that this life is always beginning with every breath. And so we surrender into the breath that breathes us, the one breath that we all share, that's always there for us. We didn't have to earn it. We can't lose it because we are it. So I invite you now to place someone in your heart that may be challenged, knowing there is power in just holding them in your heart. Our beloved Jane Stearns is challenged right now. So I'm placing Jane in my heart, knowing that the power of love, if I saw what it did with Bert, my God, that power of love can work miracles. So we harness this power of light, this power of love, through our good intention, not to manipulate the law, but to say, I trust in the law of life for the highest good to unfold in me and all around me. And as I let go of the controls, then life is in charge, and the soul is set free through the power of spirit to journey to destinations that are amazing, and realize that wherever I go, I find home right there because I carry home with me. We smile to Thich Nhat Hanh's beautiful words, I have arrived, I am home, always arriving, beginning a new day, a new breath, a new experience of love, of life, of peace, of joy, of mystery. And the baby shall lead them. I hear her voice. She is our guru. She's showing us how to be in her beautiful simplicity. With gratitude now for this beautiful life that we've been given, and for cheerful expectancy in this new year that we are about to embark on, we give thanks in all things, knowing that when we get there, there's no there there. How precious is that? And so it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.